If you have worked all 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, have had a spiritual experience, and are willing to sponsor, please also put your name and number in the chat. The chat will remain open during the meeting except while the speaker is sharing. Also in the chat, you will find our AA quote of the day. The quote source will always be from AA literature. Our speaker will share for 30 minutes on the step of the day, which I will time, and then we will split into breakout rooms for small group discussions. Each group has a moderator who will divide the time equally and invite each person to share. Questions are encouraged during the sharing part of the meeting. When you share, please be sure your environment is quiet and free of distractions. Breakout room discussions end at 12:54, followed by day counts, announcements, and the Lord's Prayer. We have asked Dell to read the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous.
My name is Dell, I'm an alcoholic. 12 steps. 1, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives would become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics, practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thank you, Dell. And today we will hear a talk on step 1. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable, from Kathy E. from Orlando, Florida. So take it away, Kathy. Unmute yourself.
Beautiful. Thank you very much, Sunny. My name is Kathy. I am an alcoholic and just going to start my time. Thank you, Kirsten, and all who do this service. Thank you, Dell, for reading, and you all for being here and to be invited to speak at your group. It is an honor and most certainly a privilege. Step 1, and it was just read out, as we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, their lives had become unmanageable. And I remember reading that when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, into a meeting, and thinking, okay, I'm down with that. I got that. And it's such a small line, but there's so much to it. And I didn't know that, nor did I understand that. And excuse me. What I have learned is that this is a two-part problem. That I am powerless over alcohol, physically and mentally, is part 1. And part 2 is that my life is unmanageable. And so I also suffer from a 3-part illness. And so because I'm so inarticulated, I'm going to use our book and read a couple of parts throughout the book to describe our step 1. And share a little bit on my experience behind it. So if you have your books, grab them. And mainly the first thing I'm going to look at is the physical part. And, you know, in my experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't understand step 1 and how it fully applied to me until I read this book, that first of all, that there's something wrong in my body when it comes to alcohol. You see, I thought that when I came here and just put down the drink and went back out and I would drink again, that I could control the amount I was going to drink, which meant that I was able to make a decision when I wanted to stop or come back to AA, which none of that worked for me. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about our Dr. Silkworth, who gave this letter to Bill in our big book. And it talks about, he writes in that little paragraph after the first letter, before he enlarges on it on page XXVI, that we who've suffered alcoholic torture must believe that the body is as quite as abnormal as his mind. It did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we are maladjusted to life. We're in full flight from reality or outright mental defects. And it goes on at the bottom to say, any picture of the alcoholic, which leaves out this physical factor, is incomplete. The doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. Well, when I read that, it most certainly interested me, because nobody had, you know, talked to me about an allergy. I thought an allergy was something like if I had a food, you know, my neck would swell up, I would go to the emergency room. And none of that happened to me when I had the first drink. None of that happened. And he tells me in this beautiful paragraph, and these pages are wrote in such masterly detail, they couldn't be much more precise, that I must believe this. And I most certainly did believe this, because my body, when I got here, I was so sick from drinking. And it tells me that if I leave this physical factor out, that I'm really not alcoholic, because I need to have this, first of all, this physical factor. And he goes on to talk about, you know, this manifestation in XXVIII, that the action of alcohol in these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class, never occurs in the average temperate drinker. So what is this phenomenon of craving? Well, it's the action of putting alcohol into my system. Like I just told you that I thought that, you know, something major would happen to me, in the sense of my throat swelling up, a rash, anything like that in regards to alcohol. But I get this, excuse me, this phenomenon of craving when I take the action of putting alcohol into my system, and it looks like I want another, I want another, and I want another. And we all know this. For me, when I was in this part of the book, it was very, very important for me to take these statements and put them up against my drinking career, my experience with alcohol. And for me, I was able to remember a time when I was a bartender, and I set up at the end of my shift at the bar, and I asked the bartender for a drink. And immediately I started drinking, and I was thinking about what to order next. Will I order the liquor? Will I order the beer? What will I order next? When will I order it, so I don't look like, you know, that that I'm not bad, quote unquote. And that wasn't me. I thought I was making a decision to order the next drink. That was my body calling for more and more and more. And I could see that clearly in my experience. Not necessarily by just reading this, because this book is not a novel. It's a textbook to be studied, and I'm always going to be learning more and more. And, you know, when I seen that, it really, really, what's the word I'm looking for? I could really understand that when I put alcohol into my body, I don't have a choice. I don't know how many it's going to take me to get to where I need to get. And and you know, when I came in here, I would hear things in meetings about, you know, needing to find out why I drink. And I could not understand that, because for me, I drank, you know, when I was happy, when I was sad, when I was, good things would happen in my life, bad things would happen in my life. I mean, there wasn't much, and it tells us in the further on in the pages that there was very little premeditation before my drinking. that I just drank. When the thought came or the idea came, I made a plan and I was off. And I mean a plan, I mean, when can I get there to drink? How much money do I have? And of course, am I working the next day? Which meant that I didn't have to be concerned about the time I got in at night, which actually never would happen, because I would always go over the mark anyway. If I needed to be home, I was never home in time. But so by reading this again on XXVIII, talks on the last paragraph about why I drink. It says men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. So that's the reason why I'm drinking, is I like the result, the effect. I can let down my shoulders. We all know that feeling, like in that moment, everything is right. I am right. I am comfortable in my skin. And it goes on to say that this sensation is so elusive, it's difficult to grasp. I'll tell you, it's injuring me. I know that. But again, I cannot, after a time, differentiate the truth from the false. And differentiate the truth from the false does not mean that, you know, for me, it wasn't like, yeah, you know, I know I'm going to wake up with a hangover. I know this, I know that. It meant that I couldn't see the truth that when I picked up a drink, I didn't know how many it was going to take. I couldn't see there was physically something wrong with my body. I couldn't see the truth about this, which I didn't have a name for it, this physical allergy. And it seems like my life is only the normal one. I go to work, I drink, I come to, I go to work, I drink, I come to. And sometimes on my days off, I was so hungover that I would sleep all day. I was a kind of drinker, you couldn't disturb me the next day because I couldn't face the world. And says they're restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can experience a sense of age, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks they see others taken with impunity. So again, I have an illness of the body, the mind, and the spirit. I am restless, I am irritable, and I am discontented until I can get more alcohol into my system. And then it talks about after that develops, I pass through the well-known stages of remorse, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. And I keep going on that spree. And it could take a week, it could take months, it could take a few days when I'm finally like, that's it, I'm done in my spree. And I hope that, you know, I'm not going to drink again, right? And it says this is repeated over and over unless I can experience an entire psychic change. And I'm on page XXIX. Until I can experience a personality change, there's very little hope for me. And at the end of my drinking, progression had got from fun to function, and now I'm in a state of oblivion, which was I can't feel, I can't see any kind of reality. When I would kind of start coming out of that blackout, sorry, that hangover the next day at work, I would have to immediately, you know, be comforted to know that in 2 hours I'm going to have a drink. I couldn't see the nature of what was going on in my life. But I remember having that moment where I was actually under the influence, and it occurred to me that I was going to drink myself to death. And I believe that was a start of, you know, that was a spiritual experience for me, because that was the truth. And now I continue to drink months and months after that. And so, and it talks about how do I get that spiritual experience? I'm just going to touch on this a little bit before I go into the next part, but it tells me that if I follow this few simple rules to get this personality change, which is to admit my powerlessness, which is to let in the idea. You see, I couldn't surrender and I couldn't accept. Surrender would mean that I have some kind of power, and accept, I just couldn't. So I had to let the idea in that I am powerless over alcohol. First of all, physically, and then I'll talk about the mental. And it talks that, you know, these few simple rules is to admit my powerlessness, that I'm also beyond medical aid, doctors, human aid, my own aid, stop drinking and do these 12 steps. And it says that, you know, whenever that happens, it talks in that little paragraph about being able to easily control my desire for drinking. And you know, I'm running short on time, so I'll go into the mental a little bit. But in our big book, again, I'm always going to reference it because I'm not very articulate. So it talks about, like, on from page 23 to 43. Now I'm talking about the mental part, which is the main problem centers in my mind. And it talks about that none of this would happen. Like I just mentioned, that, you know, I don't know what time I'm going to get home at. I don't know how many it's going to take if I didn't pick up that first drink, right? We all know that the problem centers in my mind. And again, there's loads of examples in our big book. But for me, it was very important to know and to come to see that that I had a mental obsession, that it was just a thought that every time I would have a significant amount of time sober, first time around, it was 3 months, someone walked into the place I was working at and I just said, I don't want to drink. And I turned around after saying a prayer and I really meant it. And I sat up at the bar and ordered a drink. And that thought was, there's that person from my past. And I went out and drank. And I still had an alcoholic mind. And that idea, that old threadbare idea, won out. I was thinking I could handle myself like another person, to drink with impunity. And you know, so the crux of the problem is in my mind. The root of the problem is in my mind. And it talks on page 24 in that beautiful italics about the fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscured, have lost the power of choice in drink. So I can't tell myself I'm not going to drink today. Like, I don't have that power because my experience shows I will drink if I don't do this work. And it talks about our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. And, you know, it talks about at certain times, you know, there was certain times where it talks about this in our stories. I think it's either Fred or Jim, but how keeping myself on guard all the time. I was always, you know, in early sobriety and a couple of years in, I was always walking certain ways to avoid the bars. I was always staying away from some kind of people that I would have hung around with. I thought I learned my lesson the first time around, but at certain times that might have helped me. But it goes on to say that at other times, I will not basically have that force, that power to stop myself from picking up against the first drink. So I've lost three things. I've lost choice, I've lost power, and I've lost control. And so, you know, there's three little tests in our book, because again, this is a self-diagnosis illness. I was told for a long time that I had a problem with drinking. I wasn't told I was alcoholic. I was told to go to AA and you have a problem with drinking, Kathy. And I did this to get these people off my back, or there was consequences and I, you know, didn't want to lose X, Y, and Z. That frothy emotional appeal they talk about didn't stick. It wasn't enough for Kathy. And, you know, it talks about these three little tests to diagnose myself. The first one being on page 31 is, if I can't control my drinking, do about and drink like a lady or a gentleman. And that's the first, and I couldn't do that. And it goes on to talk about the second little test, At the bottom of 31 is to step over to the nearest barroom and try to control drinking. Try to drink and stop abruptly. Try it more than once. It will not take long for you to decide if you're honest with yourself about it. It may be worth a bad case of the jitters if you're to get a full knowledge of your condition. And, you know, the only thing that is going to bring me here and keep me here is the great persuader. You know, like Bill Wilson couldn't accept all the six tenets. And I believe the only one doesn't exactly say this in the lines in the book, but I believe and true being taught is he couldn't accept complete deflation. The only thing that was going to deflate me was alcohol. Because again, it was the power. It was more powerful than my mother, my sister, the institutions I went to, the law enforcement, my jobs, etc. It dictated everything. And so I couldn't, you know, I'm very smart. I'll say, you know, I'll step over to the nearest barroom and I'll try it once. But what about trying it a couple of times? And I can't do that. And then the third little one is on page 34, you know, try leaving it alone for a year. And I did that at one time. And after that 1 year, I drank and I couldn't get a year after that. And, you know, we hear in the rooms that, you know, what is this alcoholism? And we hear words like ism and I don't know where that comes from. But I do know our book tells us about this definition of alcoholism. What is alcoholism? And it talks about that. This is the baffling feature of alcoholism in the middle of 34. As we know it, this utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or wish. I can't leave this normal substance for other people alone. And it is baffling. I'm cut off from the light. I just can't see the truth. This utter inability to leave it alone. And I'm like Fred then at the end of my drink. And when I realized, like I told you, that I want to stop, I am done. Not because of mom, not because of my sister, not because of my job, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I want to stop. I really do. And just like Fred, when I made up my mind to quit drinking, after the self-knowledge, after the amount of meetings and literature I bought before this and thinking hey, it didn't work, which is not true. I didn't work. I didn't work the program, so it didn't work. But it didn't occur to me that I couldn't stop drinking when I was ready. I was ready at the end and I couldn't stop. You know, I had that thought, I want to get back to it, and I kept drinking. And now I know that that flimsy read, that thought, is a powerful loving hand of God. Like I had this faith all along. But again, it didn't occur to me that I couldn't stop on my own. I know that sounds bizarre, but it didn't. And it tells us on 43, at once more, the alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink, except in fewer cases, neither he nor any other human provides such a defense. His defense must come from a higher power. So again, in this chapter, more about alcoholism, they're smashing and they're re-emphasizing, they're saying the same thing over and over again, because they know who they're talking to, I believe. But they need to keep telling us. And if that's the case, if I'm powerless physically and mentally, and I need to find this power, I am essentially, my word was, I'm effed against the wall. Like my back was against the wall and I was hopeless. And that is the greatest ticket into Alcoholics Anonymous. It is a blessing. Because that is going to give me the willingness, the honesty, and the open-mindedness to have a spiritual experience. If I'm down to step one, and I mean in my heart, I'm going to be able to follow the rest of the steps because I know I have no power. And lastly, just to talk about the last little part of that step, which is our life has become unmanageable. So to me, I didn't understand that. I did not. You know, I started to get things back in my life. Things started to get okay. But inside, I was really, really dying. I was really, really sick. And we see those bedevilments on 52 and then we go on to 63. But I want to talk about the unmanageability in the fact of powerlessness, right? And it's like, this is the part I really had a problem with. And it talks about in the bottom of 44, right up into the middle of 45, it talks about if a mere code of morals, a better philosophy of life were sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. So if I was brought up better, if I prayed more, maybe I could have recovered. That was my thinking. But those codes and philosophies, no matter how much I tried, I could wish to be moral. I could be wished to be a better person, nicer to my coworkers, nicer to my family, to do better, and wish to be philosophically comforted. I could pray better. I could read more books. I had a whole library of other non-conference approved literature. And it says, in fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there. Our human resources, as marshaled by my own self-will, were not sufficient. They failed utterly. So, basically, I give this example. If I go to church or with a friend who's not alcoholic, and we go there and we hear something really, really good from the priest, the minister, the rabbi, the reverend, whoever's there. And my friend goes, I've never heard that before. I'm going to go and try that. And I go, yeah, I've never heard that either. Let me go home and try that. My friend can do that. I do it for a week and I go, I can't do this anymore. Because my main problem is not, I'll just read it. Lack of power, lack of my own strength. That's a small p, which means lack of strength is my dilemma. And a dilemma is a problem. I had to find a power by which I could live. It doesn't say not drink, live. Why my life, you know, it says unmanageable. And my life was unbearable, but I was trying to wing it through. My life was unbearable. And it talks about obviously, but where and how were we to find this power? And it says, well, that's exactly what this book about is about. Its main object is enabling you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem, your lack of power, your lack of your unmanageability. Because the problem can't solve the problem at the level of the problem. Anything that comes from me cannot solve the problem. And so that was a huge notion, realization, truth to swallow. But when I could swallow it, I could see that I need power and that I am essentially powerless in those two. I'm powerless physically, mentally, and then my life spiritually. I hope, and you know, I'll just finish on this. When I was sober and didn't really get that truth about that lack of power, the unmanageability in my life was my problem as well. I was trying to, quote unquote, control everything between my lifestyle, my relationships, my jobs, my day. And again, it was unbearable. And so now I have something in my life that tells me what to do next. And that's for you guys tomorrow. I'm sure you'll have a wonderful speaker to talk more about that. Again, thank you so much for letting me come and share. And that's all I have, Sonny. Thank you.